Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Episode 26, I'm joined by the wonderful Brisbane-based sound and studio engineer, Nell Forster. Before I kick full force into the intro, I'd like to give you a heads up that we had some technical issues with the recording, which we didn't notice at the time. There are, unfortunately, a few sections where static and pops can be heard throughout the interview. They are noticeable, but do pale into the background owing to Nell's energetic passion for both her role and love of music. Nell Forster is the house sound engineer at The Bearded Lady, a bar and music venue in Brisbane, Australia. She also works as a studio engineer, recording albums with singer-songwriters and bands such as Harrison Knight, Rambler Nash, and Rhys O'Neill. Nell, a self-confessed night owl, realised after working a regular 9-to-5 admin job for a couple of years after high school that it wasn't for her. She headed off to London, worked in hospitality, at the bar at Brixton Academy, set up a band, and travelled when she could. When her two-year visa expired, she reluctantly left London and returned to Brisbane. Not wanting to work in bars forever, she started focusing on her goal of running a live music venue. But at the same time, she was recording music in her bedroom and became more interested in the technical aspects of music and applied to do a degree in music technology. Whilst completing the three-year course, she discovered that she was mostly interested in live concert recordings and studio subjects, but also dabbled in sound effects for films and games audio. In addition to The Bearded Lady, she has worked as a sound engineer at many Brisbane venues, and also for Girls Rock, an awesome worldwide initiative, providing a female-led environment that offers musical instruction through workshops and performances for girls aged between 7 and 17. Nell, I know you're working into the wee hours of this morning, so I appreciate you finding the time to discuss your role and career and to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you.
Cool. So shall we kick off with you telling me what it is a sound engineer does? So when a band comes in, you maybe just talk through what you do.
Okay, well, I've done well in the industry because I've got a hospitality background, and I think the most important thing is to communicate well with the band and work out what they need, what they want it to sound like, and go from there. And I guess our job, they're our client, so our job is to make them happy and provide the technical skills needed to get the creative outcome to the punters.
And I guess into what they want. They want to sound like.
Yeah. So communication and then just knowing how to achieve those results.
And what is that? So technically people come in, and I'm a real luddite when it comes to music, that people come in and you're obviously then help them set up, check their levels.
Yep.
Do you do a sound pre-check? Yeah, kind of stuff.
I much prefer doing sound checks. They don't always make it in time to sound check, in which case I have to run with a line check, which is quite often the case at The Bearded Lady. Like, even if there'll be like a night of four bands and the headline band will sound check.
Yeah.
So they're all good to go. But then there's another three bands supporting that didn't sound check. So in between each band, I have to get up on stage with them and get levels, which I use an iPad for, so I can actually hear what's coming back on stage and what they're listening to, which helps a lot. And also, I mean, sometimes you've got to train them on how to use a microphone as well. Some bands are new or, you know, just not that experienced and they don't have very good mic control, in which case they won't hear themselves enough if they're not talking directly into the microphone. So that happens a lot. They'll be saying, you know, can I get more of my vocal in the fold back? And I've pushed it as far as I can without it feeding back.
And what is fold back?
Fold back is the monitors on stage. Yeah. So you've got your front of house monitors that the audience hear, and then you've got the fold back, which is, you know, different artists want different balances of instruments in their fold back. So the drummer would usually want a lot of bass, for example. Vocalists usually just want their vocals. I know one girl that I mix quite often who doesn't want any vocal in her fold back, just heaps of her guitar, because if she can hear herself, she won't project as much, whereas other people want heaps of vocals so that they can tell if they're singing in pitch.
Okay.
You know, it's just different every time. So you have to speak to them and communicate with the band.
Which goes back to your first point. You just need to talk to them.
Figure out what they want. Yeah. And also with what kind of effects they want on their vocals. And, uh-huh. and also there's a bit of stage managing and show managing involved. Like some venues, the sound engineer has to do lights as well. Mm-hmm. That's something I'm not very good at, but you have to do it sometimes. Yeah. Do it really simply.
Yeah.
And make sure the show runs on time.
Yeah.
Get the band off and get the other band on. And
yeah.
sometimes a band will finish and people from the crowd come up and start talking to them. And I'm like, guys, talk later. Come on, you've got to get all your gear off so this other band can get on. I mean, there's a lot of it that isn't technical. Yeah. yeah.
You have to be fairly confident to do that as well.
Yeah, I think you do. And it comes over time. Like every single live sound engineer has been terrified at first.
Yeah.
Like everyone I've spoken to takes a while to get that confidence, but you realize that you know what you're doing more than anyone else in the room.
Yeah.
And you're on their side and you have to be authoritative in a way. Yeah. yeah.
So I saw you last weekend working at the Bearded Lady.
And that was a busy one.
It was four bands.
Yeah.
And you were up, down, like running out of the booth on the stage and back and forth. It's like a really physical job as well.
Yeah, it is. Like studio work isn't so physical. When I'm in the studio, I'm just sitting most of the time.
Yeah.
Like my busy period in the studio would be just setting up all the mics and pulling a tone for a few hours usually. Then the rest of the day I just sit here and listen and give advice, push buttons.
Yeah.
But I'm not being physical at all. Whereas live sound, you're constantly running around most nights.
Yeah.
It's not always like that. Some nights I'm not doing much at all.
Yeah.
Some nights are really easy. It just balances out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So can you give us a bit of a background as to what your journey was, you know, the path arriving to being a sound and studio engineer?
I never thought about doing this when I was younger. I have always loved live music. Mm-hmm. So my parents raised me going to folk festivals and concerts a lot. So, and I dabbled at, I never got good at anything, but I dabbled at a lot of instruments throughout my teenage years and a bit of songwriting. Never really took anything too seriously and got less. I did get guitar lessons for a year, actually. When I was about 14, I think. But, never got professionally good at any particular instrument. And I thought my dream was to run a live music venue, but not so much from the technical angle.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just through working behind the bar in a lot of different venues, both here and in the UK, that I started chatting to the sound engineers and being interested in what they were doing. Still didn't actually consider doing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was more interested in the recording side of things. Taught myself to use GarageBand and just realized I kind of wanted to do more than just work behind a bar.
Mm.
Also realized how difficult it would be to run a live music venue and the stress involved and thought maybe I want to still do something in this industry. But and I've always been pretty computer savvy. So the creative side and the technical side I think is what you need for this job. And I thought I never went to uni straight out of school. Didn't think I'd get in and did my research, actually rang the course convener of the course I ended up doing at the conservatorium, Matt, who's now a good friend. But I rang him and I said, look, I'm turning 30. I have never been to uni. I don't know how to study. I'm pretty amateur at, recording. I've been doing bedroom recordings. Should I even apply? Like, is there any point in me applying? Because it was a heavy application. You had to do a portfolio of recordings and a huge write-up. And he just, really encouraged me to apply.
That's awesome.
Like, yes, definitely do it. And then I still didn't think I'd get in. And I got in and I said to myself, if I get in, I have to follow through no matter what. Like, I'm not quitting. I have to finish this. And I did. And I'm pretty happy that I did that.
And what did going and doing that degree give you, though, that you weren't getting as such through your own kind of explorations? Because you're pretty much a self-starter. Like, you
get
on and do things.
But I'm not good at self-study. Some people, so you don't need a degree to get into this sort of work. But I wouldn't have had the motivation to go and learn all that without going to uni. I think you can definitely learn live sound on the job. Uni was good just for the physics. Learning all the science behind it, because there is a lot of science involved. people don't realize. So learning all that stuff helped, but live sound is something you just need to learn on the job.
Yeah.
It's very intense. And we didn't do a lot of live sound at uni. Mm. We did more recording, a little bit. Yeah. But, yeah, it's the same set of skills that you need, really. Uh-huh. Yeah. Ear training, training your ears and learning how to hear differently. So that's pretty much what it was. It was 3 years of learning how to hear things differently and learning how to use the tools to sculpt what you're hearing.
Uh-huh. And did you enjoy it?
No, I hated it.
Yeah. Because you said, I'm going to commit for 3 years. Yeah.
I really hated uni because I don't like, I'm a really bad listener. Uh-huh. I'm aware of that. Like I
Isn't hadn't, that slightly ironic?
Yeah. Yeah. And it is. It's hilarious. But, I'd sit in this big auditorium with like 100 students and really wanted to learn, yeah. really eager to learn. Yeah. But half an hour later, I realized I wasn't paying any yeah. attention. It's not really a listening problem. It's an attention problem, yeah. I think. Undiagnosed, but a small one.
But you probably learn better hands-on.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's just a learning.
Yeah, thing. Definitely. So I made friends with all the younger students and they helped me pretty much. Yeah. Most of them were 17 to 22, uh-huh. most of the other students. And I just, like, latched onto them because they knew how to study.
Yeah.
They were nerds, you know. I'd go over to their houses and be like, help me, I don't understand. I didn't listen. I don't know what's going on. And that was the first year and a half maybe. Then I killed it after that. And I started, like, I think I just got into the swing of studying and started doing really well.
That's awesome.
So the rest of it was easier, but it was still a lot of hard work. It was a really intense degree. We'd sleep there. We'd stay overnight. We had 24-hour access to the studios. And there were, the night before an assignment was due, there'd be 20 students just living there practically.
It must be nice as well. I mean, you've probably got contacts from that.
Yeah, we're all good mates still. And we get each other. The two guys that I'm working with at the studio here are from uni. And we all do live sound as well. There's a whole network of us now that hit each other up if someone needs someone to fill a shift or something. Yeah.
Is there a typical day or, say, a typical evening? Because you tend to work into the night. So what's a typical evening?
There really isn't. It's different every time. Like because a bearded lady, we're actually quite organised nowadays and I get run sheets sent to me telling me, like, all of the band's tech specs, what they need, so I can set up before they get there, which is helpful. And whether or not they're sound checking and what time they're sound checking. And then, I mean, 50% of the time I rock up and they're not there.
Okay.
That's just bands.
Yeah.
I love it, but it's never the same.
Yeah.
It's very inconsistent. It's an interesting thing because I don't get paid hourly. In fact, I don't think many venues pay hourly. You usually get a set rate for a night.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, it's the same amount whether I mix 2 or 5 or sometimes even 6 bands. Sometimes it's a really easy job. Sometimes I have to start at 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't have to start until 7 p.m. And it's a really full-on night. Sometimes I'm finished by 11. Sometimes I don't finish until nearly 2.
Mm.
It balances out. I don't mind that because some nights I'm earning $20 an hour, some nights I'm earning $50 an hour.
Yeah.
And it seems to work out pretty well, but there's no standard of what to expect. Even if you've got the tech specs, you still don't know what the band are going to be like to deal with and how loud they're going to want their amps to be, how loud the drummer is changes everything.
Yeah.
Because in a small room you sort of have to mix everything to match the level of the drums acoustically because they're that loud, the cymbals and the snare often. Or a guitar amp, like sometimes they really need their guitar amps to be really loud to get the right tone out of them, in which case I'll even turn them around and point them at the wall so that they're still getting their tone but it's not blasting everybody too much. Yeah, it's different every time.
Yeah, so loads of different nuances depending on what's coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you seem quite level-headed about having to do different amount of hours on every... I mean,
it's weird.
Yeah, that must have been, like, I would struggle with that if I was thinking, well, I'm going to work 2 hours one night and maybe 7 hours another night.
Yeah.
I'm getting paid the same.
And a lot of people work for corporate companies which do pay hourly.
Yeah.
and usually better rates because they want that job consistency and they want to know what time they're finishing.
Yeah.
Whereas my mates are probably used to it now, but like, what time are you finishing tonight? And I'm always like, well, I can guess, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I never really know for sure. Yeah. It's just an estimate. But yeah, corporate industry is a smart way for a sound engineer to make money. I just would go insane. Mm. I wouldn't enjoy it. So I'd rather take the pay cut.
Yeah.
And I think I work well under pressure. Well, maybe I didn't used to, but I do now. Yeah. I kind of enjoy the buzz from running around and, you know, organizing people and being energetic. I enjoy that.
I definitely saw that. Like I said, you were just like nonstop when I saw you the other weekend.
Yeah, that was a busy one.
It can
get more hectic, but that was particularly hectic. Mm. Yeah.
So you've talked about being studio engineer and recording with bands. So what does that involve? And, you know, you've kind of touched upon, but how does that differ working in a studio?
Yeah, it's quite different. So the only thing in common really is the technical skills, you know, the theory.
Mm-hmm.
But when people are in the studio, they're very different. There's never the same as well. Like, there's no consistency there either. I've had like people do hundreds of takes, you know, because they're nervous. It just changes some people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when they come in, kind of what's the technical elements that you need to focus on to kind of make sure that you're getting a good recording and getting a good performance, I guess? Are you managing the performance as well?
Yeah, sometimes. Like in the studio, I would say most of the time I'm really an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in the creative writing process with the band. Mm-hmm. They're not sending me their tracks before they come in. Mm-hmm. There's not much pre-production,
mm-hmm.
which is totally different. If I'm more heavily involved in a project, which I do as well,
mm-hmm.
then I'll work a lot more closely with the band and help them structure their song, work out how fast it should be. And sometimes I've even played bits and pieces on like a cabasa or a mm-hmm. shaker or bass for a couple of things. Did backing vocals on one track for mm-hmm. a friend. But just if ideas pop up, I'll share them.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of more producing.
Okay.
Whereas engineering is doing the technical stuff. So if I'm just engineering something, I'll say to the artist, what's the end goal?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want it to sound like? And if they've got references of stuff that they want it to sound like, that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listen to the tone of their instrument and their voice and work out which pieces of equipment are going to color that well,
mm-hmm.
make it sound the way they want it to sound in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's trial and error. Sometimes I'm swapping mics out or running them through different pieces of gear because I'm not getting the sound I want.
Yeah.
But usually it's more about making sure the instruments themselves sound good
mm-hmm.
and the singer is in the right headspace. It's really important for them to be feeling what they're singing to mm-hmm. me. I think it's important.
Yeah.
So I like to, if they're struggling, I like to, usually they're sad, like a lot of songs are sad.
Yeah.
So I like to actually push their buttons and ask them what the song's about and mm-hmm. why. How did they feel when they wrote these lyrics?
Yeah.
And sometimes that helps. And sometimes I do a bit of pitch guiding. Like, I'm not an expert singer or anything, mm-hmm. but I've learned I do have a good ear for pitch now mm-hmm. through practice.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll hear if they're a little bit flat or a little bit sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Or if their delivery on timing is out and they're not in time, that's important as well. So you've got to be able to let them know without offending them, which is very difficult.
Any creative output can make you nervous, emotional, being judged, all those kind of things.
Totally.
So that's shitloads of skills, like all these kind of tiny things that you're managing to get the right output.
Yeah.
When I say tiny, I mean it's many tiny things.
Yeah. And it's all stuff that you just sort of learn on the job, I think. But I have offended people. It is hard. Like sometimes I'll be blunt.
Yeah.
I get frustrated sometimes too because I'm like, not getting paid, we're going overtime, you know.
Yeah.
This is taking forever. But that doesn't help anyone.
No.
If I start getting impatient, we should just pack up and come back another day. Yeah.
So you've also played in a band. You have a love of music.
Yeah. Well, we never played any gigs, but we rented a rehearsal space once a week and we were very serious about it. Uh-huh. We recorded ourselves.
Yeah.
And then I had to come home. So the band was over.
Okay. From London.
Yeah, that was when I was in London. Yeah. I'm in a band now. I've just joined a band, Black Dog Cat Band, and we're not going to be ready to play any gigs for a few months, but
okay.
we're doing pretty good. We're rehearsing every week. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Are you playing the bass?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Awesome. It's nice to be back doing music again because I haven't for so long.
Yeah.
I think I just got sick of working on other people's music all the time and started wanting to do some myself.
Would you say that influences how you work with musicians, both in the live setting and the studio setting?
I think for me it's been the other way around.
Okay.
Because I wasn't really an experienced person in a band.
Uh-huh.
But working closely with bands for the last 6-7 years, I'm learning how to be in a band by watching other people do it so closely. Yeah. Okay.
And what kind of music does Black Dog Cat Band
I don't even know how to describe it yet. It's sounding a little bit grungy to me, but it's also a little bit psyche, like very slightly some songs. We've got a surf song. It's a bit surfy, but we're still sort of putting it all together. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what genre category it's going to be.
Yeah. Awesome.
One of the songs is quite heavy and doomy, but they're all sort of tied together, I'd say, indie.
Uh-huh. Watch this space.
A little bit 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Correct me if I'm wrong, but from my observation, I'd say that sound and studio engineer roles are notoriously inhabited by men.
Yep.
Have you had to deal with any bullshit as a result?
Like, not a lot, but sometimes it happens. And sometimes I can't tell whether it's a sexist thing or something else about me. Mm-hmm. It could be something else, you know. I've never had anyone openly say, oh, you're a girl.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? You can't do this. You're a female. That's never happened. But sometimes I'll realize that a band are a bit shocked, or even if it's just a member, or sometimes people in the audience will come up to me and be shocked and be like, what are you, like, they think I'm the door girl or something. Yeah. That happens quite a bit. I can read it when they look at me like I don't know what I'm doing, for whatever reason. If someone looks at me like I don't know what I'm doing, I've learned to just get extra tough and boss them around and run the show, like just put on this false confidence and just like earn their respect, force them to respect me, because that really pisses me off. If someone thinks that because I look the way I do, that I wouldn't be capable, I'm not going to let them have that opinion.
That's
I'm going to prove them wrong.
Yeah. But I love as well that you say, like, you take on that persona almost.
Yeah.
Because it is intimidating, I imagine, with certain bands or, you know, a certain person even.
Can be.
Yeah.
But I've had, like, I've mixed much more experienced engineers that I respect. That's more intimidating.
Mm.
That's when I'm like, I really want to impress this person. Yeah. Like, they know way more than me. They've been doing it forever. And that's happened a few times. And I'll be very humble in that situation. I'll be like, what do you think? Is that good? Like, should I do that? And I should be more confident, but
But that's like,
it's nerve wracking.
Yeah, and that's your peers that you want respect.
I want to impress.
So can you tell me, what skills do you need to be a good sound engineer?
I think it's all skills that you can learn, and it's really ear training. Like I was saying before, you need to learn how to hear differently, which takes time and practice. Other than that, it's just reading manuals and, well, in my case, because I hate reading manuals, I watch YouTube tutorials on how to use different mixing desks, because every venue has a different desk. And I mean, usually once you know a couple, they're all pretty similar, but there'll be different ways to get to different menus, and they're little computers and they run differently. So you just have to practice with them and read the manual. That's pretty much it.
Okay.
Once you've trained your ears... and your people skills, which is important. Yeah, you just got to learn how to use the gear, and it's all different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is it any different for someone wanting to be a studio engineer? What skills would you need for that?
Oh, that's more personal. The technical skills are the same. I think it's just the way you interact with people that's different. You're not in a hurry.
Yeah.
You're not as like, all right, this is a one-off buzzing environment, like, let's go.
Yeah.
It's more about making them comfortable and creating art.
Yeah.
So
what would you say is one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
There was a festival I worked at for some friends, and I stupidly worked the night before and got a lift down. Didn't get there till about 6 a.m. the day of, thinking it would all be set up and that I'd be able to have a few hours sleep before the first band was on at 11 a.m., but nothing had been set up.
Oh, my God.
And I just went ballistic and made everyone help me. And they did, and they were great. And we got it all set up. But it's my own fault for not sleeping. Hadn't eaten, was drunk.
Okay.
So that was really, really poor life choices. And I ended up like nearly collapsing. Like I ended up getting a bit of heat stroke and was not well by about 7 p.m. And I had to just sit down, had some friends looking after me and got me water and food and all of that. And I was like, I just push it. I think I'm a superhero sometimes, and yeah, I push myself too far pretty much.
Yeah.
Or I book too much in, and I'll book a recording session at like 10 a.m. when I'm not finishing work until 2. Realistically not going to get to bed till 4. I'm not going to function very well the next day. It's also like really hard to not drink in a live sound environment because everybody else there is drinking.
Yeah.
Even though I'm working, I'll have a couple of beers and then, you know, not enough to be drunk during the gig, but by the time the gig's finished, another 2 after that, and I'm a bit
because you finish work as well.
Yeah, you have a knockoff.
Yeah.
Or 5. No, it's not always like that, but yeah, I just overbook myself and push myself too much sometimes, which I'm learning to not do now.
So I'd say your biggest challenge is looking after yourself.
Time management as well, yeah. Time management for sure. But there have been a lot of really scary gigs where I don't know what's wrong and I can't fix it.
Mm.
And that's when I panic. And I try to, you know, go back through every step, one thing at a time. Why isn't this working? Why? What is feeding back?
And the pressure's on, isn't it?
And the pressure is on because the whole room is staring at me.
Yeah.
And I'm just like trying to think logically and figure out what the problem is. Sometimes I just don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You have to wing it and do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the scariest thing when that happens.
Yeah, terrifying.
When you can't figure out where the problem is.
Yeah. But that's, you know, another skill really, isn't it? That you just have to really think on your feet and problem solve constantly.
And try and be calm.
Yeah.
That's hard.
So what do you love about being a sound and studio engineer?
I just love seeing artists create music. It's my biggest passion.
Mm.
I do it forever. That's just what I love. I've always lived with someone who plays guitar and sings at home as well. Like I just need music in my life 24/7, and I'm really passionate about the projects that I work on. Like I get really, it's my baby as well, even though it's not my music. Yeah. I get really into it, a bit obsessive, just because I enjoy it so much. And I guess I'm envious of, in a good way, envious, and I just love watching people do it. Yeah.
But don't you think as well that love as well is like you want them, like you said before, you want them to sound the best they can sound.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So, I mean, God, any musician or band would want that.
Yeah.
Being, you know, their recording, doing the recording. So.
Yeah, and I try not to record things that I'm not that passionate about as well. But that's pretty hard. I like a lot of stuff. Got pretty diverse taste.
How do you feel your creativity kind of tap into what's going on in the local industry or the scene?
I meet clients through doing live sound. And my knowledge of any music outside of that environment is pretty poor. I'm not that up to date. Yeah. Most of the music I listen to is old music as well. I don't hear much new music that isn't local. Yeah.
And when you say old music, what's
all? I like 70s and other stuff. 90s. I was a big 90s fan.
Yeah. So what advice would you give someone considering pursuing a career as a sound engineer?
I would say not very many people want assistance. It's hard to find someone, particularly in studio, that wants an assistant, but this happened to a good friend of mine. He wrote a letter to an engineer just saying, I want to offer my services. I'm learning. I'm graduating from uni. I think he was just finishing uni. Never heard back, sort of just kept writing to other people. But then it was like months and months later, this guy wrote back to him and said, actually, I do have a project I could do with an assistant on if you'd like to come in. Anyway, that was a couple of years ago, and now he's got that guy's job.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I think I've trained a lot of people at the Bearded Lady as well that I want to work there.
Yeah.
That are working there now. But you've just got to shadow someone who's got the time to train you.
Yeah.
If it's just live sound that you're interested in, that's all on the job. Just go and shadow someone and work for free. For ages until you start getting given shifts.
Yep.
And I know heaps of people that have done it that way.
Uh-huh.
And are now doing it full time. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what about studio engineer? What skills do you need?
It's harder to get experience doing that. I was just lucky. After uni, I got handed this place really cheap because the owner wanted to help us kickstart our careers, and it wasn't being used.
So the studio we're in now.
Yeah. So I've just been paying a weekly rent, which is a very, like, it's not a very common deal. But three of us pay him weekly up until this month where I am now the new owner and they're paying me.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. I think you've just got to try and, this is the same thing, you've just got to try and find someone, network.
Yeah.
Go to network, go to gigs, go to networking events. I actually went to a thing that Q Music put on towards the end of uni, which was Meet the Producers, and it was a bunch of Brisbane sound engineers. Some of them I know quite well now, but at the time it was like talking to them about how to get into the industry. Because it's hard and not everybody, some people find it a lot harder, and I think being a bubbly personality made it a lot easier for me, being a social person, being a bit older than most of the other graduates.
Being a bit older helps, I think.
Yeah, definitely. If you start off in the corporate world, that's probably a good starting point as well, because there's a lot of work and on-the-job training in those places.
But you've worked really hard as well now.
I have worked hard, yeah, definitely. I was incredibly dedicated. I haven't had a boyfriend this whole time. I haven't had time, you know. Like, I don't do anything else.
Yeah,
that's all I do,
So what else have you got coming up in the next few weeks or months other than setting up your new studio?
Yeah, well, I'm still working on a lot of I've got about six projects on the go at the moment. Two albums that are really, really close to finished that I can't just get finished. So they're going to be finished soon. And then there's a couple of projects that I've just been working on slowly that they're not in a hurry for. Some live recording. We did one last weekend where a friend of mine films the concert and I record it and the band gets a full, like, well-edited gig, live gig, which is really good for their promotional use. I've got another one of those coming up on Thursday. That's just at the Bearded Lady, so I get to be in my home environment and record the bands that are being filmed. And I'm doing this, I'm really flattered that APRA asked me to do a workshop in a couple of weeks.
Who's APRA for those?
They're the music industry organisation that distribute royalties. They do a lot more. They do a lot of things for the music industry, but the royalty collectors and distributors for live music pretty much. But
in Australia?
Yeah, in Australia. There's one everywhere.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the UK one is, but they've asked me to do this workshop for a whole day in the studio with about 10 women and non-binary people, which is pretty daunting, but also it's basically just going to be me doing what I already do and explaining it along the way. It's just really
cool. That sounds amazing.
Really cool opportunity. I'm doing a festival again, just a one-day festival called Forest Fuzz. It's up north somewhere between Brisbane and the sunny coast. So that's going to be a fun day.
So busy as ever.
I keep getting asked to do lots of little random gigs elsewhere, which is, keeps it interesting. I like mixing it up.
Okay, well, coming to the end of the interview. Thank you so much for today. Before you go, I'm going to ask everyone is what's a career or job in the creative industry that you know little about but have always been curious about and why? And also, who's a woman in the creative industries that you would love to hear?
I think you should talk to my friend Chloe Holland, who's a stylist in the UK. Because she was a big inspiration for me when I moved to London. I think she's about my age. And she was at that point in her career where she was just doing it so tough, working constantly and doing everything she could to get a foot in the door and doing heaps of really poorly paid jobs and that sort of thing, working in a bar with me at the same time. And I'm just really admire her, you know, push and drive. And now she's doing really well. So
okay, great. I'd love to chat to her.
I'll put you in touch.
Yeah, thank you.
And she's also just a really, really lovely, beautiful person. And a job that I don't know much about. I don't know much about what you do.
Creative director.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't had another creative director on, so that would be good, actually.
You should interview yourself.
That would be very nerve-wracking.
I do know a lot of creative people, so but I think the film industry is something that I'm not, apart from audio, I don't know much about at all.
And film audio, have you done much?
Just at uni.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah. I wouldn't mind getting into that field, but I don't have time and I love doing music too much.
Yeah.
So that's just another possible. When I was at uni, I was thinking about what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get away from the music stuff. There's heaps of other sound audio industries out there that, like other career avenues that seem really cool, but they don't involve recording bands.
I think you found your love.
So, yeah.
Okay. Nell, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. And also stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to Mary Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.